I'd been using my sphere as a stool. I traced counterclockwise circles on it with my fingertips, and it shrank until I could palm it. My bolt had shifted while I'd been sitting. I pulled it up and yanked the pleats straight as I careered around tables, chairs, globes, and slow-moving fras. I passed under a stone arch into the scriptorium. The place smelled richly of ink. Maybe it was because an ancient fra and his two fids were copying out books there. But I wondered how long it would take to stop smelling that way if no one ever used it at all. A lot of ink had been spent there, and the wet smell of it must be deep into everything. At the other end, a smaller doorway led to the old library, which was one of the original buildings that stood right on the cloister. Its stone floor, 2,300 years older than that of the new library, was so smooth under the soles of my feet that I could scarcely feel it. I could have found my way with my eyes closed by letting my feet read the memory worn into it by those gone before. The cloister was a roofed gallery around the perimeter of a rectangular garden. On the inner side, nothing separated it from the weather except the row of columns that held up its roof. On the outer side, it was bounded by a wall, openings in which gave way to buildings such as the old library, the refectory, and various chalk halls. Every object I passed, the carven bookcase ends, the stones locked together to make the floor, the frames of the windows, the forged hinges of the doors and the handmade nails that fastened them to the wood, the capitals of the columns that surrounded the cloister, the paths and beds of the garden itself, every one had been made in a particular form by a clever person a long time ago. Some of them, such as the doors of the old library, had consumed the whole lifetimes of those who had wrought them. Others looked as though they had been tossed off in an idle afternoon, but with such upsight that they had been cherished for hundreds or thousands of years. Some were founded on pure simple geometry. Others reveled in complication, and it was a sort of riddle whether there was any rule governing their forms. Still others were depictions of actual people who had lived and thought interesting things at one time or another, or, barring that, of general types. The deolator, the physiologer, the burgher, and the slyne. If someone had asked, I might have been able to explain a quarter of them. One day, I'd be able to explain them all. Sunlight crashed into the cloister garden, where grass and gravel paths were interwoven among stands of herbs, shrubs, and the occasional tree. I reached back over my shoulder, caught the selvage end of my bolt, and drew it up over my head. I tugged down on the half of the bolt that hung below my cord, so that its fraying edge swept the ground and covered my feet. I thrust my hands together in the folds at my waist, just above the cord, and stepped out onto the grass. This was pale green and prickly, as the weather had been hot. As I came out into the open, I looked to the south dial of the clock. 10 minutes to go. "Fra Leo," I said, "I do not think that Slashberry is among the 164, meaning the list of plants that were allowed to be cultivated under the second new revised book of discipline. Leo was stockier than I. When younger, he had been chubby, but now he was just solid. On a patch of disturbed earth in the shade of an apple tree, he was squatting, hypnotized by the dirt. He had wrapped the selvage end of his bolt around his waist and between his thighs in the basic modesty knot. The remainder he had rolled up into a tight cylinder, which he had tied at each end with his cord and then slung diagonally on his back like a bedroll. He had invented this wrap. No one else had followed his lead. I had to admit that it looked comfortable, if stupid, on a warm day. His bottom was 10 inches off the ground. He had made his sphere about the size of his head and was balancing on it. "Fra Leo," I said again. But Leo had a funny mind that sometimes did not respond to words. A slashberry cane arched across my path. I found a few thornless inches, closed my hand around it, jerked it up by its roots, and swung it round until the tiny flowers at its tip grazed Fra Leo's stubbly scalp. "Thistlehead," I said at the same moment. Leo tumbled backward as if I had smacked him with a quarterstaff. His feet flew up and spun back to find purchase on the roots of the apple tree. He stood, knees bent, chin tucked, spine straight, pieces of dirt trickling down from his sweaty back. His fear rolled away and lodged in a pile of uprooted weeds. "Did you hear me?"
"Slushberry is not one of the 164 true, but neither is it one of the 11, so it's not like I have to burn it on sight and put it down in the chronicle. It can wait."
"Wait for what? What are you doing?" He pointed at the dirt. I stooped and looked. Many would not have taken such a risk. Hooded, I could not see Fra Leo in my peripheral vision. It was believed you should always keep Leo in the corner of your eye because you never knew when he might commence wrestling. I had endured more than my share of headlocks, chokeholds, takedowns, and pins at Leo's hands, as well as large abrasions from brushes with his scalp. But I knew that he would not attack me now because I was showing respect for something that he thought was fascinating.